organizations put forward a right way to think, right, which limits the creative brain that is in our skulls in lots of ways at times, and then also our self-perception. So all those messages that we get internally from our body that are even either told are lies, right, or are disbelieved, or are told that's not coming from a good, healthy place. So when you think about the developing brain, for those of us that were raised in the church, there is an environment created here, not just at East County, but in church in general, that is very specific to how it communicates social-emotional learning. And so when you think about the social-emotional environment in a religious organization, that there are rules put in place to govern behavior in that environment. And those rules are man-made. Now, they may come from a place that's inspired by scripture or spirit or what have you, but they are then enforced by us, by leadership, by elders, deacons, teachers, preachers, pastors, right? That those are the folks who enforce the rules of this environment. And when we as individuals come into contact with rules that we might not agree with or that we can't kind of reconcile, it creates this experience of cognitive dissonance. So what that is, if you've not heard that term before, cognitive dissonance is that our brain has a thought, but it's told it's not in match or in mesh with or in line with the environment that it's a part of. And so there's this battle between the outside message and the inside message, right? That's what causes that dissonance. So when you think about that, think about the environments, the rules as they are set up within religious organizations and churches, and then think about the developing brain. Does this kind of make sense? Are there things that I'm saying that are jiving with your lived experience? Are there any questions about that?
Does that processing get blocked in a particular brain? It's like a lot of times she just fires off in the irrational part before it moves to the logical. So does it tend to stay there when you process other things in your life as well?
So that's a very good question that I don't have an answer to right in this moment. But I can do some research and get an answer for you. Right? What I will say is that when there's, so that environment creates what's called a neural pathway. And those pathways are spread throughout our brain depending on what information they process. And those pathways then get, they're like highways, right? So the more we use that certain message, the more we have to follow that certain rule, it becomes the way in which that message always travels through our brain. And so there is this thing which is called neuroplasticity, which means our brains can stretch and grow. But it takes a lot of effort and energy to change the way our highways are kind of routed in our brain. So those messages stick.
Yeah, and I think that cognitive
and
too much to process. That's why I think individuals tend to walk away.
Yep. Yeah.
Because they have no platform or no resources to process through it, process it.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah, and that cognitive dissonance is one of those things that I think creates breaking points for people. So, Melinda, you have something to say?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to form the words. I think with this too, right, I mean, so there's the individual brain development that happens when you're raised in a certain social group, and then there's the collaborative development that happens, right? And that's an interesting thing that, like, as this is happening individually to me and that there's distance or there's whatever, there's also this generational community development that is happening simultaneously and how those push and pull against each other. You know, I mean, like, we kind of joke about, like, hive mind. But to a certain extent, that is absolutely part of this and then speaks into all of the other stuff, right? And so we have this as a church, as a faith, Churches of Christ, we have a brain development that happened over time with this culture, and then the rub against society, and then that what we know is every 7,500 years, there's a big societal change in development too. And all of those things, and how each one of those things can create breaks and dissonance and then disconnect.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that.
Ingrid.
So I want to talk a little bit too about the right thinking aspects of this slide. So that experience of cognitive dissonance, okay, if that's a continuous process for us, what that means is that we're receiving these messages internally that disagree with the messages we're receiving externally. And that leaves us in this state of kind of constant questioning or self-denial. And so when you think about the social-emotional environment that's created within a religious organization, which can, not always, I want to be clear, this is not everyone's experience, okay? But it is meant to be an opportunity for you to explore what some people have experienced. That person then struggling with cognitive dissonance, it becomes this constant struggle, right? And so then that can lead to other mental health concerns, right? That can lead to this process of anxiety, social anxiety, depression, feeling of disconnection and withdrawal from the community that we're supposed to be connected and a part of, you know, attuned to. And so there's ways in which this process of cognitive dissonance is the thing that ends up causing trauma. Thinking that contradicts the organizational rules is often dismissed, right? It's discouraged. Don't question anything. Don't push back against anything. And if you do, you're probably going to draw negative attention. It's not going to be welcome. Thank you. Those of you who were here with us last night when we watched the movie Women Talking, what a beautiful film. And if you haven't seen it yet, I do think that you should check it out. It's really, really beautiful. But this is, that was a huge theme throughout the movie, is this self-denial. We don't, there's a whole line, one of the lines in the movie says, we don't talk about our bodies as women. That we just don't do that. We don't say that here. We don't have those conversations in this space. So, that self-denial and those insecurities, they can all kind of go against this right way of thinking about yourself, about your relationships, about the world that you're in. Right? And then that will also be something that causes this desire to kind of exit, pull away, this fear response, those traumatic experiences that we have when we come into these kinds of environments and spaces. And then you think about self-perception. So the beliefs that we hold to about ourselves, this can be the thing that leads to some of the shame that we've been exploring throughout the last several weeks together, that there must be something wrong with me because I'm having these thoughts or these feelings. Right, and that thought that I'm the problem is the foundation of shame. That shame means I am bad. Right, there's something wrong with me because of the thinking that I'm experiencing. And so that's really when you think about how our brain development is influenced by our environment. That's where those foundational challenges can really come into play. So one little bit of brain science that came from this book, it's listed at the bottom right there. It's called the Pocket Guide of Neuroscience for Clinicians. It's a very user-friendly way for clinicians to think about how to do some psychoed for clients. Speaks to the way the brain contains all of our systems that partly or wholly are dedicated to receiving, processing, and transmitting information to other humans, right? So there's parts of our brain that are built to focus on how we relate to each other. And that those parts, right, are framed by the environment that is doling out the information that we receive. And what the book says, kind of, and I stretched a little, I added some words, but the church environment framed by religious organizations doesn't properly prepare children for environments that they will find themselves in most other educational and community settings. Yeah. And so as they grow up, they have been ill-prepared to handle the world at large. And so when you think about that developmental process, our children will have to leave, right? Like this wonderful, safe, beautiful space that we create for them, and they have to know how life is out there in the world. They have to know how to build relationships, how to have interactions with people that are effective and meaningful and connected. And there's lots of ways in which the religious environment does not prepare us for that experience. And part of that kind of goes back to what we were talking about in regard to how religious organizations historically view the world. That there is this separation that's expected and or created for us to pull away from the world, right? And that belief, that practice of withdrawing and retreating from, instead of engaging fully in and recognizing the beauty of, right? That we tend to pull away from opportunity to explore the world that is a beautiful shining example of God's creation. So, that's a little bit of brain science that I wanted to drop on you this morning. I don't want to overwhelm anyone, and this is not all. Like, this is usually not my jam, and so just full transparency. I'm not a neuroscientist. I think it's fascinating. And so I wanted to be able to share a little bit of this information with you. But when you think about, when you think about those environments, and I'm sure there's plenty of you in this room that can kind of relate to that experience, right? I relate to this experience. And I was thinking back, like, how early does this start for us? I'm thinking, like, cradle roll classes. Think about the songs that we sing to little babies. Oh, be careful, little hands, what you do. Babies learn with their hands. The whole world is explored with their hands, and we're saying, nope, nope, watch out. Be careful. Right? Like all of the ways in which, yeah, exactly. It starts so, so, so early. So, you know, and I think, okay, I've been talking a lot. What thoughts do you all have? What questions do you have? Where are you at with this concept?
I was just thinking that.
Thank you.
I was thinking that the cognitive dissonance becomes, I think, so great at times that it also hinders critical thinking.
Yep.
The ability to process the world in a healthy way, relationships, et cetera.
Which I think is a really basic skill in regard to how we connect and relate to the world around us, is to be able to problem solve, think critically, follow a process of solution, right? Yeah. Amy.
I saw him walk in, so.
I know.
Probably hear me on Zoom, but.
You know, this whole morning, I've just been kind of going back to the other day when we talked about, like, the social and communal spaces where church was good, world was bad. And it was, here, it was very confusing for me because I was, you know, taught that once a child is, once a male is baptized, there can no longer be a female teacher. But it's okay for me to be taught by women teachers at school. And so it was super confusing. And then to choose education as my profession, and I'm going to get paid to teach, but I can't teach about Jesus if, you know. So that was very confusing. And I think the critical thinking conversation, Bill, was very apropos because we are not taught to be critical thinkers. Yeah. We were taught, like almost a morality policing of our thinking.
Yeah.
And you need to think this way, and if you think differently, then that's wrong. And I think that's where a lot of folks my age have said, done with this kind of stuff, I'm out.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think there's a lot that we have lost because of that.
Yeah.
And then throw in the whole brain development, they're like, you know, that when you find that new, that neuroplasticity is really more difficult than it is easy to rewire your brain, those tapes are like lead. Like, you cannot break them very easily. And so being able to rewrite those tapes has taken a very long time. And they're just kind of recorded over, where sometimes some of the old messages still pop through. And so it's not something that you can just consistently change all of the things right away. It's going to come back, and you're going to have to continue doing the work, which is also the hard part.
Yep.
And then the last part was, I have a lot of thoughts today, and I'm going to try to say them all in one time and talk all at once. As a woman, I was never taught to trust my intuition. At 44 years old, I'm just now figuring out how to listen to what I feel and what my body is saying, and like those things that we call red flags. I was not taught to listen to those because I couldn't trust my own judgment because it wasn't what someone told me.
Yeah.
And that is a huge disservice that we have partaken in. And Pot Kettle, I mean, you know, I have talked to a lot of the kids that I have worked in with youth groups and just been like, sorry, I know different, and now I want to do different. And so that trusting of our intuition, even in society, I don't think women have been taught very well to to do in a patriarchal society, because what do we know?
Right? I mean, sexism. Yeah, it's very real. Thank you for sharing that, Amy. Any other thoughts? Kevin.
I was thinking about the dogma and the doctrine, right, that restricts. And there's this strange irony in the history of Christianity regarding the creed. The creeds have become restrictive in such a way, if you don't believe what we believe, you're not within our creed, therefore you're outside. And the irony is that the very first creeds, the earliest creeds, were written for the exact opposite purpose. There are resources within our own history that could help here. Those creeds were originally written to say to those who were saying, Jesus has to be just this one thing, just a human. And others were saying, no, Jesus has to be just divine. Because it doesn't make sense if he's both. The creeds were written to say, we're not closing down that question. We're writing a creed so that question remains open forever. We don't understand it, that this man is both human and divine, so we're putting it in a creed so that that question can be ongoing without prematurely being shut down. And so the irony is, creeds then became just the opposite, a means of shutting down questions. And so, perhaps we could reclaim some of the goodness, resources within our own history that remind us that the point of doctrine was to keep questions open, not to prematurely close them down. And perhaps that would help with some of this identity and cognitive dissonance and, you know, outsider status versus insider status that causes these various things you're reflecting on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. Melinda. We're working our way up.
So this is brand new information to me, all of it. It's like, I can't even possibly take it in, but the opening up of the thought that there were multiple influences on my brain, and I grew up going to a Christian school. Mm-hmm. My parents moved up here to put me in a Christian school up here. And I've been thinking back on all the Bible classes that I took and all those different professors that had their own this going
thinking.
On.
Yep, yep.
What do you do to move on? How do you begin to even move on from this awareness to a more healthy way to think of things?
Yeah, thank you for that. We're going to get to that question. Yes, and I'm grateful for you to say that. Yep. Melinda.
I'm sitting here reading that in significant discomfort, not for my own thinking, but I'll be real, I'm channeling my mother-in-law. And I'm reading this and I'm like, how dangerous this is. That's what she would be thinking right now. Mm. Like if she was sitting here and reading this, and I'm realizing there are so many, when I say among us, I'm not meaning among us, I'm meaning among us.
The big one, yep.
That would hear this and go, this is dangerous teaching. What are you doing? Right? And that just proves the point.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm like, so how do we engage in conversation with those people close to us that maybe have also created the trauma or helped create the trauma that are so into this that we still want to be in relationship with? How do we help? Like, I'm just sitting here going, how do I even begin to have a conversation? Because all they're going to hear is danger, danger, real wide, danger, danger.
No. I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, for sure.
I saw you.
No, you're fine.
Hi.
Hi.
I hope I'm getting on the right track, but I'm from the South, if I'm pretty sure y'all know that, though. And after I moved up here, I started noticing things. Like, biggest thing with me is welcoming everyone, being open and aware. And I feel like down there, they didn't always, like, it's different. And the way they taught, the way they behaved, wasn't exactly in line with our family, but that's not to say, like, it's confusing.
Yep. So. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. Beautifully stated. And this is something we've been talking about, too, is that the things that are specific to Churches of Christ, oh, thanks, is that we're so uniquely different from congregation to congregation to congregation, right? Like, literally drive 10 minutes from here, and you're going to find a different Church of Christ that has an entirely different way of viewing religion and practice, right? So, and one of the things that I will say about down south, right, often known as the Bible Belt, that there is some science that supports the fact that religiosity, having some kind of religious practice, can be good for your mental health. But the research that is out there in regard to mental health in general and religion is a mixed bag, and it has a lot to do with how you identify, right? And we've mentioned this a few times throughout this series, but the way in which our LGBTQ populations have been treated by religion has caused extreme trauma and distress, and at times has increased suicide rates. So, you know, the way in which religion is so varied, right? And particularly in Churches of Christ, because we are these really unique, autonomous things, that we can be so different in the same city and have so many wide varying practices and beliefs. So it is confusing. It's complicated, right? It's all those things that just make it really tricky.
Since he gave me a mic, I'm going to say something. In my experience is that I was given the opportunity to question and to think for myself, but it was almost like a bait and switch. So once you say what you think, it's like, well, here's all the reasons you're wrong. But continue asking questions. That's good.
Right?
It's really confusing after a while. You're like, well, okay.
Which
nothing's
just then feeds change. It feeds the cognitive dissonance, right? Because you're given this message, but every time you're doing the thing they're telling you, you're punished for it, right? Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Hi. I'm really enjoying this class.
Oh, good.
Is this working? Okay, good. So, yeah, lots of thoughts. Okay, you said something that was really interesting to me. I was raised in the Church of Christ, mm-hmm. and my mother was raised in the Church of Christ here in this area, and her parents were some of the first members of the church that they started gathering with clear back, oh my, so long ago. Anyway, my mother was a teacher of young men who were bad. small congregation, actually for that time it was pretty large, because this is interesting. And then the people from the south came up and said, you're doing it wrong.
Can't
and
do
she
that.
Could no longer.
Oh. Yeah.
So this made me think of that. I wanted to share that.
Thank you for sharing that. I think, so here's the question, right? Because again, East County is doing some things well. And so when you think about that, and when we think about what we still might need to work on, right? When we think about the environment that we create here at East County, what stands out to you as like, I'm really glad we do this. I'm really glad we create this kind of space. And what might we still need to kind of focus on? Where are our growth edges, if you will? Anybody have any thoughts about that?
One thing I think is modeled, I know is modeled at East County, is leadership not presenting themselves as having it all together, having it all figured out. And the fact that they publicly, from the pulpit, the holy hill, I always call it as a woman, can talk about their own struggles, family struggles, personal struggles, everything, somehow, to me, opens it all up for me to say, okay, I'm not doing so great right now either. Mm-hmm. And if I go to one of these people, I'm not going to be shamed for not having enough faith.
Yes.
Which 30 years ago was said in a woman's class when I shared about going through depression. I was told, think of other people more. Do this, have faith. You know, snap out of it. But the week that had just happened while I was depressed, I'd thrown a baby shower for a member.
Oh my goodness.
That was new. I'd taken a meal to somebody that needed it. I mean, I was doing my job as best as I could, but so it wasn't a matter of faith or getting outside of myself.
Yeah.
It was just me sharing in what was a very safe place, with an exception, something. And what happened was at least five other women said to me privately, me too.
Right, yeah. Thank
you. That from leadership down opens up us to just be who we are.
Good. Well, so what that's telling me is that East County is creating an environment that pushes against that process of cognitive dissonance. That there is an opportunity here to explore, to be honest and vulnerable with each other. And I think that's really important. Wendy.
One of the things that brought me so much shame in my life was being told in a class or in a setting where we're discussing that what I was saying was wrong. And of course, nobody ever came out and said those words. My dad did a couple times, but for the most part, it was just, no, turn to this passage. And I do believe that Kevin may be the master of this. Every time he's in charge of a discussion, and you are also excellent, I might say, whatever you say is going to be in some way exactly what he was thinking. Somehow, even your most lame comment is made into something quite lovely. And I so appreciate that, because I mean, I really suffered. Mm. I never got to the point where I would never comment, because I got words to say. But definitely, that I think is one of the sweet and lovely things about here, is that it's a no shame zone.
That's great.
Siblings,
thank you.
But I was just thinking of
my own experiences in the different churches that I've been a part of, and I, only speaking of my own experiences, I've been able to be a part of those churches with song leading and other things like that. But then I kind of thought about the idea of welcoming, and what I've noticed that a big difference in this place is the idea of welcoming in other churches seems to be you are always welcome to visit. But if you wanted to be a part of us, there are certain criteria you have to meet. And even when I met those criteria, I still wasn't able to fully use the things that I wanted to do that I felt would be a blessing to others. It would be a way for me to feel more connected, more involved. And then I get here, and I mean, before I was even a member here, I was always, people were having me like come up and do something musical or whatever, which is my, that's what Jane, that's what I do. I'm not sure if you get this new thing. That's but just already, and then the fact that it is, I can come up with an idea, do it, send it off to Kevin. He loves it, which is partly why I send him stuff, because he always gives me good comments.
Validation!
But then he says, don't be surprised if we play it on Sunday morning. And that makes me want to do it more, just because it's a way for me to be vulnerable with all the mistakes that I hear. But also a way for me to actually use the thing that I feel is a blessing given to me by my Creator, where I never felt that in any other experience.
Yes.
It's always a place where I was welcome to be, and I fit the criteria, but I was never welcome to be myself.
Yep. Thank you, Donnie. Pete?
Well, I hesitate because I'm behind. I'm still thinking about cognitive dissonance.
That's okay.
Yeah, I am. It kind of fascinates me a bit because I know that it's designed to help us hold on to something, mm-hmm. right? And not just be so easily pushed away, because it does create the dissonance. Mm-hmm. And we have to make some kind of choice about what to hold on to and what to let go. But I was thinking in terms of major change that has happened, you know, in my lifetime, in the last decade, you know, here at East County. I really think the biggest change, and somebody referenced it earlier, the biggest change that's happened is not that we installed women as elders, as shepherds, but was really that about 15, 12 years ago, leadership changed our view of what leadership was, and decided that we weren't going to be the board making decisions for the church, but rather we were going to be pastoral.
Yeah.
And that was that same time that Mark was leading us through how to discern as a congregation and make congregational decisions together.
Yeah.
I really think that was the biggest change, which then allowed for open conversation about women's roles and whatever other changes. But anyway, whatever, when changes happen, and especially big changes, cognitive dissonance is there for us to hold on to that new thought. I was going to say, too, it's not about changing positions. It's about changing our heart. It's about affirming relationship.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So two ways that cognitive dissonance works against us in that frame with this change that's happened is either to be threatened by it, and therefore we go back and start to idealize the past in order to make the position stronger, mm-hmm. that we should stay with the old ways, mm-hmm. the tried and true ways, familiar. But it also works the other way, that we would villainize the past. And so even in a conversation like this, which clearly has identified ways that many of us have suffered in the past because of, with traumatic injuries, because of difficult and unhealthy ways of interacting with each other, it's also possible to miss the good things.
Yep.
Like it has to be all good or all bad, or this tension somehow doesn't go away.
Yeah.
And that's a real trap.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the thing to highlight in that, too, is look where we all are right now.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we are all here. We all come on a regular basis for the most part. And I think that that kind of speaks to the things that keep bringing us back, right? The goodness of it.
Wait, we got Nolan, Matt, and Rhonda.
Okay.
Woo!
All right.
There's a little too much order in there, Amy.
No.
For as far as the direct question initially, there, the for me, it's, you know, growing up, we were always the book, chapter, verse people. We are not here. It's living. It's that whole dwelling in the word thing, which kind of popularized and kept going. But in terms of approaching the text, the holy text, right? You know, and having approaching it as a book of questions, not a book of answers. For me, it's been huge. And I think that's bled over into we can live with questions. It was always growing up, it was like, okay, questions. And like he would ask, in my case, my dad was the preacher, and he would answer. It was like, okay, that's your question. That's what you question.
Yeah.
To find the answer, not to question. And there's a comfort or a healthy discomfort, I think, here with not necessarily being satisfied with not being answered.
Yeah.
And yes, so that's the next.
Thank you. And I would say, if it's okay, Nolan, like a slight edit, that it's not that the Bible is only a book of answers. It is a book of both questions and answers. They both are there. There are ways for us to find answers and question, and they're both welcome. That they're both okay. Thank you.
So I just, something that comes to my mind is a personal experience with me and my wife. As a white male, I've always been offered opportunities to lead, to participate, to whatever, everything. And I was even encouraged to go to a Christian college, and everybody thought I was going to be a preacher, and I was going to do everything. So I took Bible and everything, and then I got married, and I thought, I always had in the back of my mind, you know, Kristen really is, she really is the, like, I would say she should have taken all the Bible classes. She should have been the Bible major. She should have been the preacher. But I never got to see any of that. For the first 15 years of knowing her, there are things that I never saw until we came here. And I haven't seen her flourish in a church for that first 15 years until we came here. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been able to see some of these things, some of these God-given things that she has. Like the stuff that you guys see in her since we've came, the first, like you getting to know her in that way is the first time of me being able to get to know her in that way. And so I don't know, like I know that our community allows for that. I think it's all of the welcome. I think it's the questions, the ability to ask questions. I think it's the setting aside the fear, I think is a big part of it. And it's just been one way that I've been able to see Kristen flourish in here, which is so, I don't know, maybe not everybody gets that experience, but it's been an amazing experience for me.
That's awesome. Thank you.
So I was raised by a very conservative Church of Christ preacher. And I don't know that I started to change some away from that when I married Paul, because he was different than my dad, a lot different. And but it didn't really hit me hard until I had kids. And I realized I didn't want my kids to grow up with what I had. Especially my daughter, I didn't want my daughter to feel the way I felt. That was really important. And I love that East County
has let me be that. You know, when I wanted to get up, didn't want to get up in front of anybody, but when I knew I had to for my daughter, I did. And East County let me do that. You know, East County let me take charge and lead things. East County, you know, let me believe in myself. And that's just really powerful. And it has been a blessing to be here.
Awesome. Thank you. Yep.
Next.
You'll be the last comment for this section of our time together. Go for it.
Well, this kind of addresses that, like, both what we have done well, but also where there's room for improvement. In saying, like, a place where I feel like I've seen growth in my 20-ish years here is that I recall, like, kind of very vividly early on in the first, you know, couple of years that I was coming here, and it was a, people were getting up and they were, like, doing blessings. It was, like, during this, like, late summer headed into the next school year, and they said a blessing over all of the students who were headed off to Christian colleges for the fall. And there were some students that were headed off to other colleges in the fall, and they were not included in that. Like, it was like it's not that they weren't included, but the person who was speaking was like, there's all these people and they're headed to these Christian colleges and it's going to be wonderful, and, you know, we'll speak a word of blessing over them. And I kind of look at Noland and I was like, what about that? Like there was like one, I was like, they're not going to a, they're, what is it, you know? So we stood up and we said something and we're like, and then we want to bless these people, you know, as well. And it was kind of a weird and awkward moment. And like, I can't imagine that happening today.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the kind of place where, and I know that, you know, the Christian call, there's a ton of people here who have had Christian education.
Yeah.
And that is something that, like, your thing, this piece of the slide that talked about that, like, kind of being in a bubble.
Yep.
Like, that's always a place for me that I'm like, what, somebody goes to Christian elementary and then high school and then college, and then so they, like, they never know what it's like. What about when they get a job? What are they going to do when they get a job and they meet other people?
Right.
You know, and so... Yeah, and so, like, I feel like that's an acknowledgement of a place that, that we've done a good job of, like, progressing beyond that, and that you can get a lot out of a Christian education, but that you can also get a lot out of a regular
yes.
education.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. We're going to keep going. And I want to say this, too, because I've been teaching this last term at PSU a class which is called Multicultural Counseling Skills. And what we've been able to do in that class is explore different facets of cultural identity. And one of those facets has been spirituality. And one of the things that we talk about in this class is how spirituality can be a source of strength that you use with your clients when you're doing therapy. It can also be a source of trauma. And so when we had those conversations in class, one of the other things they've been working on throughout this whole term is this project, which was called the Photo Voice Project. And every week they had to take two pictures that related to their identity in that week. And so when we came to that week of spirituality and they had to take two pictures, I cannot tell you the overwhelming amount of photos that were these beautiful nature scenes. That for most of my class, their spirituality is experienced in nature. Through hikes, through being by the river, through going to the ocean. Right, all of the ways in which we want to connect to that spirit that is within us by being in this beautiful world that God created, right? And the other thing that I will say, which was also a theme in that conversation, was the trauma that they experienced through religious education. Now, I say that as someone who went to Christian colleges. And I know there's a little bit of a risk because I know we have educators here in this space that work at Christian organizations, universities, high schools, and such. So I just want to say, I think that those environments serve a purpose and that there can be good in them. And, right, that there is also a lot of people in those environments that are either really scared of the world out there and don't know how to live in it, or are being hurt, right? They're just being injured. So, yes.
Would you mind if I speak to that?
I would love for you to speak to that.
So So some of us do work in Christian education, and one of the lines that I was talking about to Donnie about at We Walk is that no matter what rule we're enforcing or no matter what lesson we're teaching, it comes with this label of Christian school, right? Christian. And so, you know, a student is running in the hallway, and I have to ask them to stop. You know, I mean, everybody would do that in any organization where you have children, right?
Yeah.
But the way I do it somehow has now a label of morality to it.
Yeah.
Everything that we do. And it's challenging. It's wonderfully freeing to work in a Christian school where I can talk about Jesus. It's wonderfully freeing in that way. But it's also pinning us down all the time to this label of Christian and this feeling of, if I enforce a dress code for this young lady, because let's be honest, it's for the ladies, right? How can I do that knowing that that's what the handbook says and those are that's my job, and setting aside the fact that, of course, we try to advocate for, you know,
updating
it, and that all of the religious language is out of it now, praise God. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
But is out of our handbook, so it's not about morality. But that when I have to do that, I have to think, oh my gosh, this child is now connecting this thing that I have to talk to them about, following the rules, to their spiritual life automatically.
Yep.
And it's really tough.
Yep.
It's really tough. So I just want to say to all the Christian educators that have come through and are here, it is a tough line to walk, and I know you're doing your best.
Yeah. And right, I think in addition to that, you know, I'm grateful for the time that I had at York and ACU. Those relationships for me were really foundational, and some of them are still very important and close and dear to my heart. So, there is good, again, there is good that comes from things that also cause harm, right? So I think that's important to keep in mind. One of the things that someone had said they wanted to make sure we talked about, and that I want to make sure we talk about before we wrap up, so this will be how we kind of end today and start focus on next week. How do we help those that may have walked away from religion? What does that mean? And I want to leave you with some questions, and I think I'll send these to Carolyn and ask her to send them out this week for you to be thinking about and talking about. But first of all, why do we think they need help?
Yeah.
What is that about? And how have we framed God and religion for these loved ones in the past? And has it been in alignment with our own spiritual guides, that be the Bible, the Holy Spirit, teachings, those kinds of things? And if these loved ones are choosing not to participate in religion, are they still engaged in a spiritual practice?
Yes.
And if so, are we feeding that? Are we engaged in that? Do we want to be invited into that process for them? And what can we do to make sure they're still feeding their spirits? So, you know, I had a conversation with my brother last night as I was driving away from church after watching that movie, and I told him he should watch it, and he is resistant to that, unfortunately. He's not quite that evolved. But I did ask him, I was like, you know, we're talking about this in the morning, and I'm just curious, for you as someone who doesn't currently attend church and really doesn't have a spiritual belief or practice at all right now, what do you want them to hear? What should I say to them from you, my brother? And, you know, what he wants you to know is that you didn't do anything wrong. That, you know, my brother and I were raised by the same parent, going to the same churches, having the same teachings, and we are drastically different people. I think that message is for you. I think that message is also for my mom, that he is not the way he is because she did something wrong, but that he's an adult. He is an autonomous individual who made choices, and he is making those choices every day. And also that he, you know, the other thing that he said that I want to share with you is that hearing more of the same that he heard growing up doesn't help him create any change in his mind. That's not going to be the thing that's going to make him come back to church. And he said, which I was so like appreciative of, but he and I have had more than a few conversations about spiritual practice and religion, our experiences growing up, particularly in the last couple of years, because this has been a really interesting thing for me to explore in the last couple of years. But that he said, you know, the conversations I have with my mom, with our mom, are not the thing that make me want to reconsider my beliefs, but the conversations I've had with you have led me closer to that. And I think, my hope is that that's because in our conversations, I'm really just exploring curiosity. It's like, but don't you see that that was wrong? Like, the message we received from the church wasn't the message that God meant for you to hear. And I just think he's never had the space to explore that. So that is a message from my brother to all of you. And I will ask Carolyn to send these questions out so you can think over them throughout the week. And then we're going to start here next week when we come together, okay? Thank you.